Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Declare your independence on the Free Talk Live Network.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, coming to you from the Sonoran Desert. Oh, man, it's very nice, very beautiful, and it's warm, and it's green. Green desert, man. You get a little bit of rain, a little bit of sun, man, stuff happens. We're doing a very, very, very special show for me, and maybe for you. We're going to be talking with Curtis Stone. Now, Curtis Stone has, I'm going to read just a little bit of bio here, but I'm going to have him introduce himself because I got a gazillion questions. I'm going to be a good boy. I'm going to try to be quiet and listen, Curtis. But I already shut up and let Curtis say it. So I'm going to let Curtis talk, but I got a bunch of questions. So get ready to monologue me, Curtis. I just want to make sure, you know, you're ready to go. All right. No dinner on my show. You're not yakking, I'm yakking, all right?
All right.
So let's do a little bio here. Curtis Stone is an internationally recognized industry leader in small-scale farming, regenerative agriculture, and self-reliance. His book, The Urban Farmer, in 2016, you'll see the cover up here, and we have Donna, make sure his book is in the archive so they can order it, so they'll have the opportunity to get that. It's a standard material used by market gardeners, homesteaders around the world. Curtis is co-creator of FreedomFarmers.com, a platform and community dedicated to self-reliance that teaches people how to get on the land and everything from there. He lives off-grid with his wife and children in southern British Columbia, Canada. Now, it's not just that he's a homesteader. It's, you know, we have a lot of Curtis Stone videos and so on. We, you know, just about everything he does winds up on Freedom's Phoenix anyway. But the main thing is it's a little different because he's in British Columbia. Now, we have good friends that live on the Canadian border in Washington up by the Columbia River, Idaho border up in the corner up there. So I'm familiar kind of with the, you know, what you're dealing with. And we've been going up there for, God, over a decade, you know, summers we'd spend that, so I get it. But it snows, okay? So it's another thing. As we go through this, I want you to talk about, you know, from the beginning to the end, your mindset, how you got, were you already freedom-oriented? Did you become freedom-oriented? Did you plan on documenting it? You know, did that come later? The YouTube thing was at the beginning, that's always going to be part of it, or not? Then, the fact that I know how it is, you know, videotaping, working, editing, doing all that, and homesteading? Are you freaking kidding me? You know, so I'm just going, well, obviously you have once a week that you're doing. You're doing a daily thing, so that may change here too. So the we're talking about power. We're going to be doing a lot of water retention, so I'm interested in your pond thing. We have heavy equipment that needs. Well, what I'm even looking at, because we are generating so much electricity off-grid, we're doing a lot of electricity. I want to know what your capacity is. But here in Arizona, I'm not short of power. So then it's storage. Well, we got a bunch of that. So then I go, okay, Do they make electric loaders and stuff? A guy can, yes, they do. Well, isn't that interesting? So I don't have to have any fuel. So we're going to, you know, try down that road. Then we have, you know, what animals do you have? We've had a couple of acres that for 10 years we did. We had turkeys, goats, chickens, aquaponics, that kind of thing. So we're not total newbies, but I love me some chickens, man. Chickens are easy. Chickens do themselves. I love them. If you don't have chickens, you're doing it wrong, you know, so we'll talk about that. So this is kind of where I'm at. We're not at the beginning, you know, of all of this. We kind of have enough knowledge that with 18 acres of gentle slope, I get to craft, you know, get to have my little driveway landing strip kind of thing, ultralight. And my son says he can put his Cherokee down there. And I'm like, okay, you know, you first. But we have property that we can really manage well to do exactly what I always wanted to do for the family. There is other things coming. Why are we prepping for this? Why are you documenting it? And the big thing, all of this, because we're going to go a couple of hours, you know, so Curtis has, you know, set aside time for that. We're going to go a couple of hours, and the biggest thing that I see is a question that I have is all those people that want to come help you. They want to visit. They want to be part of. No, I'll just camp down here and, dude, kind of, you know, how you're managing all this volunteer effort, you know, or you need it. Who would you allow on your land? Under what conditions? What kind of private membership association of LLC if you're not allowed to, you know, you got to go kill a deer and, you know, get an eagle feather before I'll talk to you? Something. So these are the kinds of things that may be a little bit different than what you're normally doing when you do interviews, but we're going to talk about it. So, Curtis Stone, tell us every little old thing from the beginning, your first memory as a three-year-old onward. Go.
Well, we don't need to start there. We might as well bring value to your audience. So, yeah, I mean, people have known me as the urban farmer for many years. I've been a content creator on YouTube for over 10 years now. And, well, it would have been just 10 years in January. But I was farming 3 years prior to that. So I kind of got started in, what was it? What would it have been? 2010 officially was when I started making money as a urban farmer. And then I started YouTubing about that in January of 2014, and that's how people kind of got to know me around the world. I was not doing anything new per se, but I was pushing the boundaries of small-scale farming and what could be done in a small space with limited resources. So I started my farm at that time on $7,000, and that grew. I made a profit of $20,000 that year, and I doubled it every year for about 3 years in a row. Got to a point where I was able to make $120,000 in revenue, but you know, not I wasn't getting rich off it, but I was bringing home, you know, $50,000 to $70,000 myself for a almost full time job.
Selling what?
Selling vegetables, selling organic field vegetables, high value vegetables mostly. So quick growing crops, salad greens, baby root vegetables, anything that grows in 60 days or less. That's what I became specialized in. And built a career doing that, and it led me all kinds of different ways. I found very quickly that it's kind of like there's a lot to be said about the right time and place, and I really got started at the right time and the place. At the time, there was a demand for this locally, but also internationally, and it was after my first year of farming. I just had people all over the world calling me, and it was just crazy, and after my first year of farming, I was literally down in San Francisco teaching workshops for 1 year. And I never pretended to be this bona fide expert. I just said, hey, this is what I'm doing and this is how it works, and I'm happy to share it. And so it really led me into a whole different bunch of directions. I had a background in music performance and composition. I basically tried to make a go of being a professional musician 10 years prior to starting the farm in Montreal. And so I was a good performer. You know, I wasn't crowd shy. I could talk for hours. I enjoyed it. And so people liked my ability to communicate the information. And so that was a big part of my success. Also, the fact that I put myself through that musical experience in Montreal by working in the Canadian bush as a tree planter. And so this is a job, you make money per tree. So it's very, you know, you get what you give, really. And so I really learned how to work hard during those years, my 20s. And so I guess you could say my music career as a performer and organizer, because I was the band leader and manager and primary composer, as well as my ability to work really hard, long hours in grueling conditions, lent myself very well to farming. And so I was very good at it right away. And then, you know, in my travels, I met a lot of people who were also doing similar things, and that actually helped me with the enterprise, because this was before a lot of the stuff was online. You know, when I was getting started, there wasn't anybody else in the market gardening space showing videos on YouTube on how to do it. So it was, you know, myself and a few other people, we got to know each other, and then it really started to expand into other things. And so I did that for 8 years. I actually closed the farm in 2018 because my career outside of farming, talking about farming, either consulting, public speaking, or, you know, project managing for people and building online content really took off. And so I basically got to a point where it was actually difficult for me to manage the farm. And I had another guy who was my key guy at that time, but he was getting burnt out, and I basically just closed it because I couldn't manage all these things, and I couldn't find somebody to step into my shoes. You know, you mentioned volunteers. We can talk about that too. But essentially, you know, I had to move on to other things. So really fast forward, a lot of things to, let's just kind of bring us up to date. I had a good amount of success during that. My book took off. My first online course took off. So I was making money. I was kind of living the American dream, if you will, in Canada. And when COVID happened in 2020, at this point, I had my daughter was born in 2017, and then my son was born in fall of 2019. When the whole COVID scam happened in 2020, my wife and I realized really quickly that we did not want to stay in the city anymore. Like, we weren't liberals. And so we're liberal in many ways, you know, live and let live and all that, but we weren't bought into the social justice leftist stuff. When COVID came around, we were like, this is insane. People are freaking out about a cold. And I was watching my neighbors change, and it was really troubling, because I'm a social guy. I knew everybody on my street. You know, in the wintertime, I would snowblow my entire street. I would go and shovel the old ladies' driveways. You know, I'm that kind of guy. I'm the kind of guy that helps people and build social rapport. And I had really good relations with my whole neighborhood, blocks around. But when COVID started, I saw them get crazy, and they were starting to get paranoid, and the word was out that we were anti-vaxxers, and I wear that label proudly, actually. We are anti-vaxxers. My children are not vaccinated with anything. We'll never do any of that. I mean, I was vaccinated as a child, unfortunately, but I saw the attitudes change, and I was just going,
this is not how old your children are. Tell us how old your children are.
My daughter is, will be 7 in April, and my son is 4.5.
Okay,
so they're still little. And I started late. I'm 44. You know, we started late having children. But anyways, we had to get out in 2020. So we went on, it would have been spring of 2020. I got really radical about finding an off-grid property. I always wanted to be off-grid. The only reason I got into urban farming is because it was something I could do without a lot of capital, because I could borrow people's land and farm it. That's the whole thesis of my book, is showing you how to farm on leased land. And I was able to bootstrap a farm without buying land, and it allowed me to learn a lot about farming and build a business and all of this. But when the whole COVID thing happened, we got radical about finding a property. So I was driving all over the province. I wanted to stay in BC. I could have moved to Mexico. I could have moved to Tennessee. You know, I've been an online entrepreneur for 10 years now, so you know, and I could have done that, but I like it here. And I often tell people I prefer the devil I know than the devil I don't. So I understand how things work here. I understand the law, Canadian law, and I'm a big freedom advocate. And we live a very free lifestyle up here. And so, yeah, we found this property.
In spite of Canadian law, or because of it?
Because of it. Canadian laws, actually, you'd be surprised. It's probably a better conversation for the private, but I will actually believe we have more freedom up here than you guys have down there. Just mostly because the state has less force. The state here doesn't kick down your door for raw milk. You know, it doesn't. It sends you letters. You know, Canada is soft fascism. It's fascism in pink with a rainbow swastika, as I like to say. And so if you get caught up in the politics and the news, yeah, sure, it sounds like tyranny, but at the same time, it's not. We're not bombing other countries. We don't have a domestic military. You know, Canada is actually a very free country if you understand the rules. And I do. I've spent 10 years researching the law, and so I've gone down the rabbit hole, and I've read hundreds of Canadian statutes. I'm probably thousands of hours at actually reading law, so I understand it. So that's why we stayed. But, yeah, we found this place in 2020. It was almost raw land. All that was on here was a cabin, and I wanted to do it all. I got a deal on this property because it had three things that nobody else wanted, but I saw opportunity. And number one, it was off-grid. Number two, it had difficult access, which I like because I'm a public guy, and I've had fans knocking on my door for years, and I didn't want that, as well as the starving masses, if you will. And it didn't have a consistent source of water, but I knew, just because of my experience with farming and visiting farms around the world, that I could harvest a lot of water in here with ponds capturing snowmelt. And so I did that. Yeah, there's a picture there of our property. And so I got this place for a steal of a deal because nobody else wanted to do what I wanted to do. And these things were on my bucket list. I always wanted to build my own house. And,
well, how big acreage do you have? When you say this place, how big is it?
40. 40. And so that shot there is kind of the inner part of our homestead. We kind of have 8 acres that's fenced because we're in wildlife country. We got whitetail deer, mule deer,
bears.
We got moose, bears, cougars. Cougars they never come around. But
okay, now this wild turkeys. This square that you see kind of here, that's only like 10 acres maybe. So it's probably four times that size, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Where that road is, if you kind of draw an imaginary circle around that where those houses are, that would be the 8-acre area that I've fenced with the 10-foot fencing. And then, so we're on 40 acres, so it is a lot bigger. It wraps around this ridge. It's a really, really unique property. We have southeast aspect, which is the best aspect for a property if you're in a cold climate, because then you get full sun in the early morning. All winter you get full sun all day, but then in the afternoons, the late afternoons in the summertime, you get a reprieve from the sun, which is really great for our climate, boreal climate. You know, you're in an arid climate. It's very different than ours, but our climates are hot, dry summers, similar to what you'd experience down in Arizona, but cold winters with lots of snow. And we love the snow.
Where are you in British Columbia? I mean, how close are you to the Washington border?
Very, very close. I can drive to the U.S. border in like 20 minutes. So
okay,
we're kind of in eastern Washington, call it, northeastern Washington.
Okay, well, I'm familiar. We go up every year to Northport.
Yeah.
So how far are you from Northport?
Not too far. I don't like to tell people exactly where I live, but yeah, we're not too far from there, like Wenatchee
Valley.
Okay, so
if I went up in this summer, Northport, you know, it's like, you know, yo, what's up, and we'll go golf and get a meal across the border or something.
Yeah,
now that you can.
I would say, you know, go straight up north from Spokane, basically, is if you were to go straight to the border from Spokane, that's kind of the area that we're in.
Very close to the Idaho border
as well.
Yeah, no, that's right where it's where the Columbia River is, right there at
the
crossing. Yeah,
that's right.
I hit a golf shot and hit you. Okay, I got it. Okay,
yeah,
so
that's
cool. We've been up there, God, most every year for 15 years. So I'm very familiar with the climate up there. I've been there through a winter. You know, our friends up there have a farm. They got like God. I know they're like a dozen buffalo now. You know,
we love it. And it's not, you know, as far as Canada goes, we're in the warmer parts of Canada. We're a zone, probably a zone 4B if you measured it in USDA zones, but on the cusp of a 5 because we do have a really good growing season. Like, I can have crops in the field outside from April till the end of October. I mean, I didn't plant my garlic this year until late November. So,
well, see, this is why I was kind of interested, and I knew when you said dry, that eastern, northeastern Washington is dry. You know, it,
yes.
I mean, they get snow and so on, but it's not, you know, Seattle. I mean, it's dry, which is why.
Well, and that, well, it depends. If you go south, like Spokane, where Spokane is, if you draw a line basically straight west along where that Columbia River branches down, that is actually semi-arid, what we call a BSK climate. But just north of that, say where Colville is, that's in the Boreal. So it's dry, but not as dry as that area, that there's that brown area in the middle of Washington. We're not that dry. We're in the Boreal climate with softwood trees. We have lots of vegetation around us. So it's not nearly as dry as that area in particular. Because when you drive through Washington there, you hit that Yakima and Omak and those towns. It is dry and wide open, not a lot of trees. You see they've got the wind turbines all around there. That's different than where we are. We go further north and you get into the trees. It's a lot nicer.
Yeah, I'm trying to drill in on this map so I can see where you're at. Because this is of interest because it's, you know, we have, you know, U.S., America, and Canada kind of working together on a lot of stuff anyway. So you're kind of in this mountainous area over here, I would imagine, around here somewhere.
That's right.
You know, so this is, yeah, that's, man, we got some overlapping. All right, when you talked about you started doing your vegetable gardening and, man, I made money. I'm familiar. I even have pictures of the gardens that are done in the farm that we frequent up there. I have good friends and supporters up there. And they produce vegetables. I mean, this thing is, man, they make hay when the sun's shining. This mass, they have probably a crew of three people all day, every day out there just picking stuff. They're drying it. You know, they're freeze-drying. They're canning. They're, you know, whatever. It's, you know, you get everything ready in the summer, and that's what lasts you through the next year or, hell, 2 years. But the so when you say we had a market and we were making money, from who? I mean, you know, who was buying it? Were you restaurant chains, big distributors, people showing up at your
farm? I started with farmers markets.
What about lockdown? There were no restaurants. I mean,
well,
you know,
I was out. I got out of farming before that, so that's I was my farming career. I closed my farm in 2018, so when lockdowns happened, I was out. And I, you know, I saw there was a lot of things that I was seeing coming that led me to get out of farming.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
USA News Update. President Biden's budget proposal for 2025 aims to reduce the federal deficit in part by increasing taxes on high-income earners. Additionally, the plan unveiled Monday outlines measures to bolster Medicare and Social Security and foster the growth of clean energy employment opportunities. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu acknowledges differences in perspective between himself and President Biden.
Look, we have our agreements on the basic goals, but we also have disagreements on how to achieve them. Ultimately, it's Israel that has to decide. side. Our neck is on the line.
Netanyahu's remarks Monday followed a recent interview in which Biden said that an Israeli invasion of the city of Rafah would constitute crossing a red line. Americans believe high prices will continue for the foreseeable future. According to a recent survey by the New York Federal Reserve, consumers believe that the inflation rate will increase to 3% within the next year. John Schaefer, USA News.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. shopsupertea.com.
Are you paying too much for term life insurance? There's a tremendous price war among the major term life companies. Rates have dropped dramatically in the past 2 years. For example, a man age 45 non-tobacco user, $1 million of coverage is only $75 per month, level for the next 10 years. Or a man age 50 non-tobacco user can buy $500,000 of coverage for a monthly premium of only $110. Guaranteed not to change for the next 20 years. That's right, level rates for 20 years. And if you're a smoker, we have great rates for you as well. At the Term Lifeline, we specialize in policies of $500,000 and above. So if you're looking for new or replacement term life insurance, call right now for a free quote.
Rates and availability may vary by state. Sample rate quotes are based on preferred non-tobacco underwriting exam required to qualify.
800-430-1891. 800-430-1891. 800-430-1891. That's 800-430-1891.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
That just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, on Free Talk Live Network on Genesis. We're continuing our conversation with Curtis Stone, author of The Urban Farmer. He's a farmer, an author, speaker, consultant. We're picking his brain for what he knows about how to make your land pay. Who do you allow on your land? Volunteers, paid staff, neighbors. How do you deal with being off-grid? Well, also, we got to talk about big tech and the role that they play. This is an interesting conversation. He gave us a couple of hours. Many thanks to Curtis Stone.
I closed my farm in 2018. So when lockdowns happened, I was out. And I saw there was a lot of things that I was seeing coming that led me to get out of farming. Also, too, just the attention I was getting. You know, I was semi-famous, you know. I mean, I literally had people knocking on my door coming from all over the world. I had a guy from Iceland who just knocked on my door one time. And you know, people, this woman from the Philippines show up with her 6 kids, 2 books, wanted me to sign. Like, it was a bit much, and so I had a lot of attention on me, and I think with attention comes, you know, opportunities for sure, but also comes haters. It's inevitable that when you get sort of famous, you get people that will hate on you for some reason. And I kind of came out of the closet in 2016 as a conservative or as a libertarian, so to speak. Yes. And I had a lot of old friends that all of a sudden hated me. And in fact, I had an ex-girlfriend who, up until that point, we'd been amicably friends. She became my worst nightmare, and she started calling customers of mine, restaurant customers, saying that he's a Trump supporter, which I wasn't, that I'm a climate change denier, all the epithets, you know. He's a homophobe, though I have a gay brother, you know. I think all this bullshit. And I saw people get crazy. And so it was an interesting time for me because kind of coming out of the closet as a libertarian or free, you know, a real Americana, you know, that's where my heart is Americana. And that was hard. And then when COVID happened, you know, it was like that was it. I got to get out of here because people are losing their mind. And I got to get out to the country. And in the country, I will tell you that it's very, very conservative. You know, Canada, just like the United States, is the politics that people understand it for are the politics of the city, not the country. And so Canada is much the same as the United States. It's very conservative in the country. People.
Yeah, Eastern Washington, not the same as Seattle. Not even in the same category.
Not even close. You go down to Colville, towns like Republic. It's salt of the earth, and it's the same up here. And so, you know, that's I had to get out of the city, and that's why when the whole COVID thing started to happen, my wife and I were just like, yeah, we are done. I mean, I always wanted to be off-grid. I always wanted to be on Broadacre. I always wanted to do the permaculture stuff, the off-grid stuff, but I didn't have the means. You know, I came from my family had no wealth. Like, I never was – my parents didn't pay for me to go to college. I did. You know, my parents couldn't co-sign my first mortgage. I did it. You know, so I had to make it all myself, which I'm glad I did. I had to get out of the city. And we realized that a long time ago. Just I didn't have the means until – about 2020, where I could say, okay, I could actually finally afford to just buy a property and bootstrap it, which is worth.
So you worked up to it. You kind of, you know, how did you rent the property? You kind of like, I'll farm it for you. You get to keep
irrigation. Well, that's how the farm started. Yeah, that's the farm started that way by me going to people and saying, hey, I'll turn your front yard or backyard into a garden. And I needed at least 2,000 square feet of a yard to make it worthwhile. And so we did, because it was a suburban town, Kelowna. And so that's how I started there, as I just made a deal with them. I'll bring you a basket of veggies each week, a mixed basket that comes from the entire farm, which had multiple sites. You know, it had up to 12 different locations. It had a hub where the processing, the cold storage and all that stuff would happen, and microgreens and the nursery and all that. But then it had these satellite plots. So that's how the farm started. But when it came to me buying this property, no, I bought this property in cash because it was cheap.
Yeah, wait. Time out. Holy crap. Okay, I did not know this. So the way you started, you just go to people, hey, I see you have a yard. I wish to use your yard. I guess you use their water, you know, or something.
Of course, but that's an insignificant cost. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you had infrastructure there. You had water. I mean, you know, that was a benefit of going into the town, somebody's yard. And you said, yo, what's up? My name's Curtis Stone, and I wish to farm your garden, and you get
digging. Literally.
Okay. You know.
Knocking on doors, assuming that I'm a Jehovah's Witness knocking at the door. No, I'm not here to sell you anything. I just, I notice you have a nice yard here, and I'd like to tell you about what I do because I think I can help you. I notice you're not maintaining your yard. How about I do all the work to maintain your yard, make it look really pretty, and I'll give you vegetables every week. So I only really had to knock. I think
What year was that you started that?
2009, actually, I started wrangling plots. I started developing the farm and building the infrastructure in the summer of 2009. And then I spent basically starting in August of 2009 all over winter building infrastructure, building a greenhouse nursery, building a post-harvest workshop on a property. I was able to secure one property at the time. It was a house that I was renting and living in, and I was able to turn that into my base of operations. So I had a little nursery greenhouse there. I had a 250 square foot garage, single car garage, that I converted into my post-harvest area where I could do washing of salad greens. I had a walk-in cooler in there. I had some lighting racks to grow microgreens and start my early tomatoes and things like that in January. And I also had the front yard and the backyard of that house. And so it was kind of my base of operations. And it was really cool because that base of operations, because it was right downtown, got so much attention. People would walk by and be like, this is cool. What is going on here? And that's actually the thing that sold people. It wasn't really me knocking on doors, though I did that for a long period of time, and it was really difficult to just do cold. Knocking on somebody's door cold doesn't really yield much, but it was the work that yielded everything, is that people saw, holy crap, this is really cool what's going on here. And people get it because it's not hippie gardening, you know. It's 30-inch beds, straight lines. It looks like a farm. It's productive. The beds are bountiful. We're harvesting huge amounts of produce in small spaces because we're utilizing biointensive techniques, which is a...
Oh, dang it, man. It was just getting interesting. We lost you there for a second. Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I lost like the last 5 seconds. But
okay, well, I was just saying that, that property, that base of operations, really sold the idea because people could just see it and they got it. Yeah. It's like straight lines, bountiful crops, lots of color. Wow, this is amazing. How do I get involved? And so it just got to a point where it just steamrolled, and I just got more plots and interest than I could manage. And the business was a total gravy train because, like I said at the beginning, I got in at the right time at the right place, and people were just so keen on it. And kind of bringing it to where we are now and the whole discussion of the COVID scam and all that is that the challenge I had, there was a bit of a transition in my career, is that liberals loved this stuff. And liberals often are the bigger buyers of organic and local food.
Right.
But they don't like it when somebody espouses views that aren't like theirs. Like, they love diversity until you espouse the diversity of thought. Opinion, right? yeah, they love diversity until you come out as diverse. And so I had this transition for 4 years where I had to kind of reorientate myself in the market. And it was all good. Like, I did. My career really took off in 2016 as a public speaker and an author and a consultant and whatnot. And so I was at that point bringing in 3, 4, or 5 times more money than the farm. And that allowed me to do a lot of cool things. It allowed me to find a key guy who could basically just manage the farm while I was on the road doing public speaking gigs. I was flying all over the world. I've been to 45 U.S. states. And so, it was, it allowed me to shift. And I saw a shift coming in 2016 when a lot of the political correctness was getting really crazy, drag queen story hour and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of had to position myself as a thought leader in a way. And that's what I wanted to do anyways, because that's how I've always felt of myself. I'm a creative guy. I like to share ideas and help people. And so I kind of,
Yeah, this is the picture up here. Isn't that Marjorie Wildcraft?
That's Marjorie Wildcraft. Yeah, she's a good friend.
We have an affiliate link. We've had her on quite a bit and met her at Narcopoco. And so I emceed the last 2 years at a Narcopoco. So I got to meet all the – I didn't go this year because I'm busy doing this, getting the land thing going. And, what I wanted to – drill down a little bit more detail on some of these steps that you went through. One, you had the confidence and the desire to, there's a market for, I make lettuce. I'll make lettuce on your land, and you'll get some of my lettuce, and I get lettuce, and I got a market for the lettuce. Why? Because they were looking for quality, fresh vegetables, and there was a local, the restaurants. Yeah. And so, where was the market?
Well, the market was right next to me, and a big appeal to the customer, especially with the high-end restaurant customers, which became my niche. That's kind of what I became known for, is that I really got into the culinary space. There was two chefs, one chef in particular, who kind of took me under his wing, and he really liked what I was doing, because when I started, I was delivering everything by bike. Like, my business was so local. I was a 10-minute bike ride to the farmer's market that I sold at once or twice a week. I was a 10-minute bike ride from most of the restaurants that I served. And my CSA customers, my veggie box customers, they came to the farm to pick up. So my business was extraordinarily local. And people liked that because the product was fresh, and I could command a good price because of that. The product was the same day or next day. It's hard to have same-day product at a farmer's market because to do the harvest and then go to the market in the morning is pretty much impossible. But so we'd do it the night before. But so we had a fresher product than everybody else. The other thing that was a huge advantage for my farm is that we had the heat island effect. So in the city of Kelowna, which is probably a zone 6 on average, in the downtown, I'm a zone 6B. So I had product and greens. I was the first guy at market with spinach, carrots, radishes, beets every time because I was in a warmer climate than everybody else. And so that was a huge advantage for the marketing and the customer. And so, you know, the product sold itself. I mean, I also can hype stuff. You know, I can sell stuff, and I was passionate about it. I'd never done sales in my life. I'd always worked manual labor jobs, but I found, and I was, my dad always wanted me to get into sales, and I never wanted to because I never really wanted to sell things that I didn't care about. But I found that when I really cared about the methods that I was farming with and the product, it was an easy thing to sell. It was an easy thing to be passionate about because I didn't have to bullshit anybody. And so they loved it. And
okay,
so
that's
really,
true. I gotta warn you. I mean, I'm gonna be putting this on network. They freak about the swear. Man, I don't care. But
yeah,
you know, if I'm gonna be putting it on, I get yelled at. So FYI, thank you. I wanted to get the transition from you doing this, and we'll get into some of the, you know, the Freedom Farmer stuff and so on. But first, I wanted to, you know, talk about your book. When you decided, because this is, I interview a lot of people. I mean, thousands. I mean, it's been a thing, you know, since 2003 I've been doing this. And it's, the one thing that I always ask is why? You know, why are you this way? Why would, you know, what sibling, what boss, what coach, what employer, what grandparent, what something that made you even give a crap, you know, or have the confidence that you could do this, or shift from the music career into I'm growing lettuce. I mean, you know, this is, yeah. And then having the confidence to do it, you had to have some kind of positive feedback or just a drive in your own. And I can understand, I am way more happier outside in the dirt, working, investing, seeing the fruits of. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to this. So we're kind of coming at it from two different directions. One, you were doing it, then became an influencer and travel around and speak and do that kind of stuff. And I'm kind of, you know, starting from that, trying to grow up and be like Curtis Stone, okay? So as we make this transition from two different areas, where's the overlap? And let's talk about the book. When you did the book, why did you do the book? You know, how difficult was that? You self-published, you just threw it, PDF on Amazon, whatever, and all of a sudden it blew up. What? Let's talk about the time frame of doing the book and what happened since then.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so in 2014, I started to get a lot more notoriety, and it was because I started publishing YouTube videos. And it's not like my channel went viral at that time, but it did get a lot of views, and all of a sudden I was doing a lot more speaking gigs. I was getting invited all around the world, mostly the United States, but also Canada, going across Canada. Canada's a big country. And I was going to Toronto a lot. I was going to Montreal. I had a pretty much an ongoing gig at Concordia University for years where I'd go and do this workshop there. And the book came out of, I was in Montreal, 1 year, and I really got to know a guy named Jean-Martin Fortier, J.M. Fortier. He published a book on the same publishing house as mine called New Society Publishers. It was called The Market Gardener. And him and I became immediate good friends. Like, we're the same age, had the same passions, and we started working together. And actually started bringing him, I love his work, so we met in Montreal, became really good friends, and I lived in Montreal for years too, so I understood the Montreal culture, spoke a little bit of French, and also just, you know, had this connection with this guy. And I started bringing him out west to teach workshops, because I'm an entrepreneurial guy, I've always been. And so I said, why don't you come out west, I'll make a little tour for you, with, you know, Vancouver, Kelowna, and a few other places. I'll help you organize it. We'll make some money together. And so he would stay at my house. He stayed at my house. And he said, dude, why don't you write a book? Because he came, and at that point, you know, he saw my farm, and he was just so blown away by it. And it was similar to his, but different, you know, more intensive. He said, you really should write a book. And I said, no, that's kind of funny. I've never thought about that, but I think I could do that. I mean, I was a high school dropout, but, you know, I'm smart enough. I'm sure I could figure it out.
Yeah, there's spell checker.
Yeah, exactly. But he said, you should write a book. And I said, okay, I'd love to. He said, well, let me introduce you to my managing editor from the publisher. And so he connected us over email, and they just said, hey, can you give us like a 2-paragraph synopsis for what this book would be? And I wrote that up, and they said, this is great. Let's do it. So I got a publishing deal right away. I spent 18 months.
Okay, whoa, 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 whoa. I got a publishing deal right away. Yeah, I'm just, you know, I just, you know,
yeah.
batted my eyes, and they just, was it because of you? Was it because of the subject matter?
Well, because it was because of the content, because the subject matter was there was a need for the subject matter. They liked the idea, and they could tell that I was already somewhat out there. And publishers today, if you're going to get a publishing deal, you have to have a fan base and an audience. They won't.
Yeah, they want money.
No publisher is going to publish a book with just a guy nobody's heard of. And that's where self-publishing is good. Though if I write another book, which I think I will, I probably will self-publish it.
Yeah, no, the tech is totally different now. I mean,
the tech's totally different now. It was a slam dunk. I had the introduction from Jean Martin, and then they basically said, "Yeah, absolutely, this is a great book." And so I started working with them right away. And so I spent a summer coming up with the outline of the book. Basically, the main subjects, the main chapters, and then I would just fill in the details from there. So it was quite an easy process in that, but it was quite grueling. It was about 6 months to come up with the framework of the book, 6 months to write it, and then 6 months to edit it. And the editing was grueling. That was the part that was really painstaking, because it was going on while I was still managing my farm. I had two full-time guys working for me at that time, and it was a grind right finishing that those last 6 months. But we got it out, so it came out in 2016. It was like maybe November 2016 or something like that. And it was a huge success. It still is a good seller in the urban farming or market gardening category. It's still a big seller. You know, books you don't make a ton of money on, but they are a big fancy business card, essentially. They make you a bona fide expert, you know, and so, you know, the university, that's when all the university gigs started coming up for me. And that's where, in that space, like, you know, you go speak at conferences like Anarcho-Poco, you know, you're not making much money, because these kinds of conferences, nobody's really making money. You go down for the event and the connections, and that's all great. But in the university space of conferences, you can make huge money. And so I was going and making big money to speak at prestigious universities, and I could command a very high speaker fee. And I was getting to know guys like Joel Salatin at the time, Elliot Coleman, other leaders in the space, and finding out what they were charging. And I was having, you know, a lot of success. I'd fly out to Boston and make $20,000 on a weekend and come back home, you know. So
yeah, I want to talk about Joel Salatin a little bit, because we have our friends up in Washington went and spent, you know, weeks there doing his thing and such. And if they'd known about you, you'd be a lot closer. But do you have tours? Do you have people, you know, coming and visiting you and working and doing, you know, you have workshops, this kind of stuff?
Because that's not anymore. Not here. On the farm, I did. So on the urban farm, I did. I would host workshops and do very well. I would charge $2,000 a ticket. People would come and do a 5-day workshop with me. We would cater it. We'd run everything. And I also did those around the world. So I did that in Sweden. I did that in various different places in the United States. I would build partnerships with other farmers that were using my methods. And so, yeah, we did that. I don't do that on the homestead. I'm going to now. But it's everybody has to go through the filter, so to speak.
Okay.
I'm not having anybody on my property, basically.
All right, let me go ahead and give you, you know, one of my concerns that we discuss on the show quite a bit, and, you know, what the plan is. Going around and doing the speaking, certainly, I don't know if I showed you, this is what we're building, you know, in the desert here. You know, this is kind of, so it's going to be, it's a thing. It's different. Station. It's not going to be. Well, the reason I'm not a
Venus project.
You know, I don't give a crap whether it's a dome or not. That's not the point. But since 08, during the, you know, Levolution years, when we had the workshops and everything, you know, doing the Ron Paul Levolution here and so on, we took the advantage of the opportunity then to build our first geodesic domes, because we had the workshop there, and before we closed that, we, you know, let's make domes. So we did that. I built prototypes. Matter of fact, up in Washington, you can drive down and go see it. I mean, you know, we have, you know, several there. So now it's time for us to do it. And the reason the dome was because it incorporates the most square footage with the least amount of material. It's a lot cheaper. And you get a quality thing. You know, that's only a reason why the dome, the wall and the ceiling is all the same thing. You can build it monolithically. I, you know, have experience. I got a stamp press that stamps out the struts. I put it like those, that wire dome that you see in the back here. I got two of these sitting over here ready to erect. You know,
wow.
Boom, let's go. I got a third one that happened. You know, I just buy the conduit and, you know, stamp it out and boom, done. You put the hog fence, wire it over it, a mesh, and you start putting cement on it or spray foam or whatever, and you're done. I mean, you know, and then now I'm going to make it cool with the, you know, the hallways. It's not, see, it's, ooh, it's so spaceshipy and so on. I go, yeah, that's a side effect. I don't care. You know, my wife is like, ooh, it's a dome. Well, I start showing her interiors with wood and kind of, she gets some of the flat walls in and put a TV on one. Okay, there, you know, get off my butt. So this is, it's not because I want to live in a spaceship. That's not the point. It was the most amount of square, because one of these is our master bath and bed and bedroom and my studio and the garage and the workshop. And then there's other outbuildings. You know, that doesn't matter. That's not the point. Mm-hmm. The point is that, when you do this, there is going, a lot of people, oh, when you're going to have a workshop, we have a workshop, and beginning workshops. We know a lot of people, but there's also a lot of povertarians that want to couch surf and come and how long can I,
exactly.
You know, sit out watching, yeah. You know, the sunset, ganja weed in the evening of chilling and campfire and jerking around and not working. And I'm like,
yeah.
No, it's a workshop. And if you're not working, that means you're bothering somebody else that is. So, you know, I don't need you. So I'm wondering, when you talk about your filter and the people that are coming out and that you want to work with, what is your criteria? Because when I go around speaking, oh, we got to have an intention. Oh, yeah, definitely. Ernie, you and Donna can bring your love bus out and kind of start and be the hub of kind of guy. I go, what makes you think I want to do that? I go, I got three questions, and this is standard for me in any of these kind of conversations. I knew we'd get to it with you.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Have you ever watched a video on the internet and found yourself waiting for the skip the ad button? The reason this takes a few seconds is because the video delivery companies get to collect impression commission, and the viewer never sees the advertisement. The company still pays full price to run the ad. Does this sound like a scam to you? Is there any wonder why internet ads are so ineffective? For over 100 years, radio has been a proven source for companies' messages. Radio listeners are engaged and want to support the companies that sponsor the shows they're so passionate about. Simple companies like window treatments, security, pillow companies, and more have been able to break away from the big box stores, building multi-million dollar businesses. Find out what radio can do for your business. Call 877-996-4327. Or advertise at GCNLive.com. That's advertise at GCNLive.com.